This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello, this is Neil Mitchell from 3AW. What are you listening to? Well, you should know. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
That was Neil Mitchell. This is Nevena. I'm joined by Macca, and we have our first guest in the studio. Who's with us?
We do. Simon Ruth, the CEO of Thorn Harbour Health, joins us for a regular spot, and it's always great to see you, Simon, and to come into the studio. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good, Macca.
You're good?
Yeah, you know, Saturday morning, I'd normally be still making breakfast at this
time.
Yeah, I'm here.
You were going to say sleep.
I was going to say sleep, but yeah.
Well, before we get into the gritty stuff, what would you normally have to eat as a weekend breakfast?
It depends if I'm cooking or my partner's cooking.
Okay.
If my partner's prepared
cook?
To cook, I'm going to go with bacon and eggs. If it's me, it's more likely to be toast.
Yeah.
So. You've answered that.
There is something about bacon and eggs, isn't there? You know, that, and, you know, when you have other stuff with it as well, it's always great. Anyway, look, I just wanted to ask that. What about you, Nevena?
I'm going to absolutely, you're not going to like this, Macca. I would probably have boiled kale, boiled eggs, sauerkraut, toasted almonds, probably some shaved carrot. I don't want to make the listeners hungry, but that is my favourite breakfast in the
Sounds very gassy to me.
Look, we've got Simon in the studio. If you have a question for him that's not breakfast related, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 0427 569 949. That's 0427 569 949. Some constructive questions for Simon Ruth. But Simon, just starting off, we've had some local cases of Mpox in recent weeks. We'd love to hear a bit of a status update about what's happening in Victoria and Australia, and if possible on that global lens, if you've got that.
Yeah, it's interesting globally right now. I think when I was here, 5-6 weeks ago, we talked about the fact that there were small outbreaks in Chicago, and the IML, the International Man of Leather, was on there at that time, and London also had a small outbreak. Right now, the outbreaks are in Thailand, China. We're not 100% sure whereabouts in China because the Chinese government doesn't tell you. Taiwan's got an outbreak. Japan and South Korea have outbreaks. So it's a very different group of people we're talking to. Last year, when it was around Pride events in the Northern Hemisphere and even Chicago and London, we're talking about people going on holidays. People, when they go on holidays, are usually planning around they're possibly going to have sex and they're thinking about that and thinking about what they can do and preparing to get tested. When it's in Thailand and China and parts of Asia, a lot of people are just going home. They're not thinking about what's going to happen when they're going home. They're not thinking about the risks that they might be taking. They're going. It's a regular trip that they probably take once or twice a year. So it's a very different mindset for those people travelling. And so the cases we've seen in Australia recently have, and there's been 3 or 4 in Sydney, a couple in Melbourne, 1 in Canberra, have all been people either travelling back from Thailand or China,
wow,
or who can identify that they've had sex with someone who's just returned from Thailand and China. So our messaging, if you look at our messaging online at the moment, you'll see messaging in Thai and simplified Chinese and Bahasa, I think Vietnamese. We've also got some messaging in. ACON's doing similar work in Sydney. Emanate, our national project, is also targeting Spanish. There's another small outbreak happening in Portugal and Spain that's a bit concerning, and Brazil's got something going on as well. So it's different messaging and people travelling for different reasons, and so we're having to target that.
I think in some of those places, Simon, as well, you know, China, okay, well, the Chinese aren't going to tell us much detail. But, you know, some of the other countries where there are quite good public health systems in a lot of ways, but talking about this in those countries, probably other than South Korea, I might think can be a bit challenging for communities. Is that a fair assessment?
Taiwan's pretty progressive in their approach. China, you know, isn't. And Japan has complications as well about the way it talks about sexual health and injecting drug use and other things like that. But you're right, you know, there's also possibly outbreaks in other parts of Asia who don't talk about it and don't have screening. There's a couple of cases in Malaysia. There's a couple of cases in Indonesia. That actually could be a lot more cases, and it's just that those governments don't have the services set up to test and treat and don't count what's going on. So that's a bit why we've done the messaging in Bahasa and in Vietnamese and some other languages as well. We know that people from those countries are less likely to read our English messaging.
Yeah. So getting back to, you know, getting vaccinated and getting tested, how do people go about this?
Everyone should be getting vaccinated, particularly if you're considering any international travel. I mean, right now, everywhere in the world, it's a potential risk. We know there's those outbreaks in Asia, but there's things popping up all over the world. We've stayed on top of it in Australia. Clearly, Europe and the US have not stayed on top of it. They're still getting small outbreaks. It's possibly just going to become part of our regular travel medicine going forwards. But if you want to get vaccinated, and we encourage everyone to get the two vaccines, if you're a patient at Prahran Market in Northside, go there. Dr. George's clinic in the city, go there. Because of the current outbreaks, a lot of the university clinics are doing vaccination as well, and the clinics in the city that target international students and migrants are also vaccinating. And if all of those aren't options or you can't find it, call us or go to Melbourne Sexual Health, both of us. Call the Centre Clinic and we will either see you here at the Pride Centre or we can see you in Abbotsford, and Melbourne Sexual Health is also vaccinating.
Great. I mean, it's an important thing to do, and it takes, you know, 10 minutes of your time, you know, to do it. And if you're traveling and, you know, you might indulge in activity that potentially could see you get monkeypox, well, you might regret it later.
Yep.
That you didn't spend that 10 or 15 minutes getting vaccinated.
Yeah, and the vaccine has changed. Last year when we were vaccinating, we were doing the subdermal, which was just under the skin. That did scar for some people. We're no longer vaccinating that way unless you request it. So now it's a normal vaccine in the back of the arm.
Okay.
Simon, you mentioned that mpox has fallen a little bit off the radar in Europe, but it's been maintained on the agenda here in Australia. How do we keep that conversation going, that people understand that it's going to potentially just become part of regular testing and, as Macca said, just getting that vaccine done?
It's an unusual test. It may not become part of regular testing unless you have symptoms that look like it. Currently, if you walk into any of the sexual health targeted clinics, if you come in with something that looks like syphilis, we will also test you for monkeypox.
Yeah.
And one of the doctors recently, one of the cases in Victoria, said they thought it was syphilis.
Right.
And it was only that they had a practice of testing for monkeypox that they did it, and it came back as monkeypox. Okay. And in that case, Marcus Chen, who's at Melbourne Sexual Health, said within 2 days it looked like monkeypox, but when the patient first walked in, it didn't look like monkeypox, and so it could have been missed if they didn't do that naturally. We talk a lot about monkeypox, and you know, for a certain number of the percentage of the community, it's terrible. They'll end up in hospital. It's horrific pain. They could end up with pox covered in them. For most people, it will be a mild condition. But we still have things like antibiotic-resistant Shigella going around. We still have syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, which we have major outbreaks right across Australia, and we need to stay on top of all of those. So everyone should be getting regularly. If you're having sex, you need to be getting regular sexual health screening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either if you're a gay or bisexual man, every 3 to 6 months, and for the rest of the community, at least annually.
Mm. I mean, it's an important message, and I think that, you know, people need to understand, one, it is infectious, it's not pleasant, and you can really avoid a lot of that by simply getting vaccinated, and it's free.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what else do you get for free? You don't get much else for free.
In a cost of living crisis, free goes a long way.
You know, what do you want, a free vaccination or a free dose of monkeypox? Make the choice. Mm.
So we don't think right now that there's a major outbreak happening in Australia. It's all linked directly to travel. We're not doing what we did last year where we were really concerned that it could turn into something different. But we are ready to go. If we suddenly see a burst of cases here in Melbourne or Sydney, we will be back where we were last year, setting up major vaccination clinics around the city and trying to get as many people through as possible.
Yeah. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Nevena. We're speaking with Simon Ruth, the CEO of Thorn Harbour Health. When we come back, we want to talk about Thorn Harbour's 40th and some things that are happening around that and some planning. And the upcoming LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference. So stay with us. Saturday Magazine, Macca and Nevena with Simon Ruth from Thorn Harbour.
Hi, this is Dan Andrews, and you're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Thank you.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Nevena. We're speaking with Simon Ruth, CEO of Thorn Harbour. And Simon, just as you were walking in, there was some tinsel and glitter from the 40th anniversary of Thorn Harbour Health. Mm. How were the celebrations and how are you feeling after all those events?
Have you not managed to get your glitter off yet from the party? It was fantastic. We had the Ruby Red Ball at Melbourne Town Hall, major event, about 500 people in attendance. A great night was had by all, and we had a charity auction at that and some fantastic speeches. A lot of people have commented on the speeches that were given that night and some great entertainment as well, 100% Kylie and Mama Alto and the Gay and Lesbian Chorus, who were all fantastic. And then we had a series of exhibitions, of which there's still one here in the Pride Centre. It's still up for a couple of weeks, and a number of forums where we talked about history and our health promotion campaigns, and we discussed two boys kissing and the impact that had, and talked about what was happening in the early days and where we're going in the future. I love the history of the organisation. Yeah. I love hearing the stories from the first 10 years and I find them very inspirational. I heard stories this time I'd never heard before, which was just wonderful. I'm aware that there was a man called Ian Goller in the early days of the organisation. I had no idea what a central role he played. Ian was a doctor who went to San Francisco very early on in the epidemic, back in the old days before social media and the internet, and when you had to get paper sent to you, and he was sending parcels of information back to Melbourne Sexual Health and to the AIDS Council and informing what was happening in the States, because it otherwise would have taken months.
Yeah.
And they were saying how instrumental he was in what was going on, and then Ian came back to Australia and unfortunately passed away from age-related illnesses himself. And then Peter Lederman we tracked down. So in 2015, our original board, we gave them all life memberships, and there were three board members we couldn't track down, and we managed to track one of them down. He lives in Bendigo now. We had an event in Bendigo. He's quite frail. I tried to get him to the ball. I promised him everything under the sun to get him to the ball, and he just said, "I'm too old, and I'm not coming to Melbourne for that." But so we ran an event in Bendigo and had him at that event. And
that's fantastic.
Gave him his life membership, and it was just wonderful hearing him talk about 40 years of the organisation and his involvement, and it was great.
40 years is a long time. Joy's only 30. And, you know, to think of the people, you know, who dedicated so much of their life and so much effort, so much money, so much labour, to making, you know, to getting the organisation off the ground. And I don't think people, a lot of our listeners perhaps won't understand what the environment was like 40 years ago, what HIV was like, and that, you know, when people stood up and advocated and said, this is what we need to do, it was not universally popular, was it?
No.
It was a pretty unpleasant environment, you know, to be advocating in.
Yeah, no, it you know, it was still illegal to be gay or lesbian in most of the country at that point. There was a lot of fear at that very first meeting at the dental hospital. Phil Carswell, who's still very much involved and sits on the board of the Queensland AIDS Council. Phil talks about the fact that we didn't know it was a virus. We didn't have a test for it. All we knew was it was killing people in the US, and the doctor said, don't have sex with Americans.
Yes.
And Phil said half the room had just been to America for the gay games, had sex with a lot of Americans, and he said the whole room was terrified. And that was when Alison got up and said, let's form an organisation. And and a lot of our early, particularly our early board, they were organisers. They were unionists. They were from the far left part of the political spectrum. And it was about collectivism and getting organised. And that's how our organisation and the drug user organisation and the sex worker organisations and many of those early HIV orgs all got started. Yeah.
So 40 years on, nothing ever stays the same. And I suppose, you know, the organisation is looking at you know, developing a new organisational strategic plan, which a big part of it is going to be community advisory groups participating. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so when we rebranded 5 years ago now, so we became Thorn Harbour Health at our 35th anniversary, and we very firmly said we were going to head down the path of LGBT health. It hadn't been as clear till that point, and much of the growth over the last 5 years has been in that space. It's been in trans health and mental health programs and family violence, drug and alcohol. But we recognise our history is in a very specific part of LGBT health, and so we need to ensure that all, as a community-controlled organisation, we need to ensure that all the voices of our community are heard. And so we're going through a process of setting up community advisory groups for specific parts of the community to make sure that the board hears what their views are and that they can inform us of the services they want.
Yeah.
As community-controlled organisations, we only exist so long as the community want us to.
Of course.
And because we're membership-based and the members elect our board, we are accountable to the community. We encourage everybody to join up. If you want to have a say in the future of the organisation, please become a member. And so we're looking, we've got a number of community advisory groups. There's a mental health lived experience one, a women's advisory group, a HIV advisory group, a trans health and First Nations advisory group, a multicultural and multi-faith advisory group. I always miss one. Can't remember what the last one is. Disability advisory group.
Disability, yeah.
To ensure that we meet the needs of people with varied abilities in our community. So each of those groups is in the – we've had some of those ongoing. COVID had a huge impact on the ability for them to meet and doing the work. So we're re-establishing them all at the moment.
And if people are interested, you know, in participating, excuse me, in these community groups, details on the Thorn Harbour website?
Yes, they are, and on our social media. We're in the process of – there's a couple that I think we need more people for, but we're in the process of setting those up now. And we're writing a new strategic plan, which the board has decided will go till 2030, towards 2030 plan, a seven-year plan, and so those groups will play a central role in the development of that plan.
Good. Simon, part of the expansion of Thorn Harbour Health is also the women's health, and coming up soon is the Women's Health Conference. Can you speak a little bit more about that and how people can get involved?
Yeah, so the registrations for that open today, I think, if not today, Monday. If people go to, I think the website is lbqwomenshealthconference.org.au. If you put in LGBTI Women's Health Conference, it will come up on Google. It's on the 24th and 25th of October this year. It's back in Melbourne. Again, COVID was very unkind to face-to-face conferences. So the last physical one we had was in Sydney pre-COVID. We've had a few online conferences since. I think this is our sixth or seventh now coming back together. The whole goal of this conference was to get policymakers interested in women's health. That's still a struggle.
Why is that?
When you look at the funding we receive, the funding tends to be through diseases and conditions. So we talk about gay and bisexual men's health, but it's actually HIV money. And if HIV goes away, that money will go away. Trans health is about access to medical services, drug and alcohol, family violence. It all tends to be through that lens. Unfortunately, queer women, LGBTI women, don't tend to have one condition that we can pin them to, that we can funnel a lot of money towards them. So it's an ongoing issue. We now have a women's health strategy in the organisation, which we continue to give to government and give to every MP that we speak to and try to get them interested in women's health. Get a lot of smiles, a lot of nods, as you always do when you talk to government, but don't get a lot of money. That said, we've got some work with Arches, Rainbow Health Australia, and we're doing some research into women's alcohol and tobacco use and drug and alcohol use, and so there's a few interesting research projects coming up.
Particularly the drug and alcohol and tobacco, we know a lot there about men. But in women, there's a bit of a lack of data, isn't there?
Yeah, well, what we know about men is because it contributes to HIV.
Yes.
So all that research was previously funded by HIV, and so there's very little research on women and even less on the trans community and the intersex communities. But we know that particularly for older queer women and those who are living rural and regionally, that drug and alcohol issues, particularly alcohol, play a serious role in their life. During COVID, we saw Dykes on Bikes do some really fantastic work keeping women socially engaged online and trying to tackle some of that. And we've had the Rethink Your Drink campaign and Can't Do That With a Hangover campaigns that we were running. We got Vic Health funding for that, so the Victorian Health Promotion Foundation, but we no longer have that money. But it is an interest area, and it's an area that women have highlighted with us that they want to look at.
Perhaps we need to, Nev, what do you reckon? Perhaps the government throws $200 million at women's sport.
How about women's health?
How about see if you can do something with the Matildas? That might.
Oh, we would love to work with
the Matildas. Get Jim Chalmers to have a look in the bottom drawer, see if there's some money there, you know.
It's interesting, Simon. The government recently released another gender equity strategy. And we know we've got those gender targets across government as well. It's on the government agenda, but the health piece seems to be one of those missing puzzles that, Macca and I and many others would love to see that continued and ongoing investment, because Thorn Harbour does great work, especially around you couldn't have done it with a hangover. I've sent that across to some of my friends, and it's become a little bit of a social habit. Someone goes off for a hike on a Sunday morning, or someone does something that doesn't involve waking up with a hangover, and you just see it really transforms lives.
There is money for women's health. There's just not money for queer women's health.
We'd also love to know anything else that's on the horizon for Thorn Harbour. There's never a shortage of events coming up. Is there anything that we can share?
Right now, the focus is on the Women's Health Conference. We've got some staff going to Fast Track Cities, which is a conference, a HIV conference in Amsterdam in a couple of weeks. And we've had a staff member invited to Taiwan to present on chemsex, which is pretty exciting. So there's a chemsex conference in Taiwan, and one of our drug and alcohol staff, Julia, will be heading over to that to talk about the work we do in that space. We probably do a lot more drug and alcohol programs than most of the rest of the queer organisations around the country, so it's been a bit of an interest area, and my background's in drug and alcohol as well. And we're just coming off the Brisbane AIDS conference, and some, there were some great findings out of that. U equals U was reconfirmed. If you're undetectable, you can't pass on HIV. There was another piece of research called Reprieve that showed that people with HIV are at high risk of cardiovascular disease. And so all people with HIV should be put onto statins, regardless of whether there's other indicators for that. And there was a new cured patient, so the Geneva patient. So that's now six people globally that have been cured of HIV out of the 14 million who have HIV. Once again, it was a patient who had cancer, and they were doing a stem cell, a bone marrow replacement, and the cure was just, by the by. It happened because of the other treatments that were occurring, but he's now been HIV-free for 3 or 4 years.
Now, that's interesting, Simon, because we've actually got a message from a listener here, a question for you. He says, I've been HIV positive for 30 years. Now I have stage 4 melanoma, and because of my HIV status, I'm not allowed to participate in any cancer trials.
Research trials are interesting. Everything will knock you out of a health research trial. Being pregnant will knock you out. Being of childbearing age will knock you out of a trial. Being under 18, having any comorbidities will generally knock you out of research trials, because they're concerned that it might impact on the results. And it's not just cancer research, mental health research. If they're doing pure mental health research and you have a drug and alcohol issue, which a lot of people with mental health problems do have, they will exclude you from the research. It's not good. If you can't read English, they will exclude you from research, because they say, well, you can't properly consent because we're not going to take the time to explain the consent process to you. There's a lot of ethical issues with research, and completely understand. And for a lot of cancer patients, the treatments that they need, they can only access through research. And so it's incredibly problematic.
And is this something that, the organisation, I know that it comes up quite a bit from time to time, and I know you advocate on it. Do you think, getting that narrative, or those rules changed, is going to be very difficult, isn't it, to make exceptions?
Yeah, well, in a lot of cases, they would just pull the research if the rules had to change, because they would say, we're not going to risk our drug it's usually drug research.
Yes.
And they're trying to get something to market, and they're not going to risk that by running the research. Yeah. So if in Australia we said we think this is unethical, they would just pull Australia out of the research trials.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, and thanks for that question from a listener. Thanks again, Simon. Thanks for your work, and hopefully tomorrow's breakfast you get what you want or what you need.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Simon Ruth, CEO of Thorn Harbour Health. Macca and Nevin are on SatMag. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new campaign from Equality Australia. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.